Now, for another Golf Today Roundtable, as we welcome in Bob Herrig, senior writer, Sports Illustrated, and Josh Carpenter, a golf reporter with the Sports Business Journal. Bob, I'm going to go ahead and start with you. We were just talking about that impressive performance by Chris Goddard. What do you see that could make him that next star that we've been talking about?
I think you guys hit on it, confidence. You know, you just need that. You need to get this done a couple times. And now the next time he's in that position again, he knows he's done it. He knows that if he doesn't get it done, it's not the end of the world because he's done it. I mean, that's the good thing now. You're not grasping for those wins like you were before. And as you noted, you know, he's put himself in the signature events where he can step up in class a little bit with some of these guys. He's in the majors. These are all things now that he can build on.
Josh, we just finished the Sony Open. It's the last year of the current deal that ran through 2026. With the uncertainty that's now surrounding Kapalua, are you prepared for a universe in which the PGA Tour is bidding aloha to the Hawaiian swing?
Yeah, I'm prepared for it, Ryan. I mean, there's still a chance that, you know, maybe Sony re-ups for next year and beyond. But I think a lot of time with these sponsor deals, like if you get to an expiration date and that tournament is not renewed yet, then there's a good chance that it's not going to renew. And I think we've heard all the talk about how expensive it is to stage tournaments in Hawaii. All the talk about, you know, will the tour leave Hawaii? I think with the way Kapalua played out last week with not having that event, and then with Sony expiring this year, certainly a possibility that we move forward and don't see, at least maybe not to start the season. I won't rule out them going back to Hawaii at some point throughout the season because I think the tour does see the value. It's interesting to me, you know, a lot of the leverage that the tour had in this kind of ongoing battle with LIV Golf is its tradition. Playing at these, you know, tournament locations like Pebble Beach and Riviera and Kapalua. And so to me, it's kind of ironic that Kapalua and Hawaii, they would go away from altogether. So maybe we don't see it at the start of the year. Maybe they figure out a way to get back to Hawaii. Maybe it's not two tournaments. Maybe it's one tournament. But maybe they figure out a way to work that into this kind of reimagined schedule that we're expecting to see next year.
Now, Bob, you were a busy man last week. You were in South Florida. LIV Golf had a media week event where you got to talk with a lot of players and a lot of executives. First and foremost, the news that Brooks Koepka was being welcomed back to the PGA Tour. How did that land with LIV Golf?
Yeah, Rex, look, it's a blow to them for sure, but they sort of took the high road on this. Scott O'Neill, their CEO, expressed well wishes. He says, I want Brooks to be happy. We want all of our players to be happy. And, you know, he got in the little snippet that, hey, we'd love for all of our players to play on the PGA Tour. We do not restrict them from playing anywhere. And of course, we know why that isn't happening right now and why it's so restrictive. But, you know, they took a positive approach on this. And, they tried to spin, we're moving forward. You know, we're happy with the things that we're doing and some of the players that we've added and the venues that we're going to. And so I don't think they were going to give a negative outlook on things. That certainly wouldn't have been a good tact. But, they took the high road and went positive, as I think we would have probably expected.
And Josh, one of their biggest assets, obviously, on LIV is Bryson DeChambeau, who would seem to have a boatload of leverage after Brooks Koepka departed. How do you see Bryson's free agency unfolding in 2026? What can we expect on that front?
Bryson, as you mentioned, has a ton of leverage. So I would imagine we'd see a lot of talking points throughout the year between he and maybe his agent talking, getting, you know, a lot of people are saying Bryson's commanding like $500 million. Like, is he worth that much money? I don't know. But I certainly think we'll hear about it throughout the year. And honestly, like, I think that's one of the kind of, this was like Brian Rolapp's like kind of masterstroke, like his first big deal since he joined the PGA Tour as their CEO. And I think what this does is like, even if Bryson and Rahm and Cam Smith don't come to the tour right away, what it's done is it's kind of put this question out there of, you know, will these guys come back to the PGA Tour? At that media week that Bob was at last week, like all of them were asked straight up about it. And they all said that they're going to play on LIV this year. But to me, it still creates this talking point throughout the year of, will these other three come back? And then what other players want to come back to the PGA Tour as well. I think Patrick Reed made some comments just today in Dubai saying, like, hey, I'd be open to playing on the PGA Tour. So I think it creates that. But then certainly for Bryson, it'll be a storyline all year long until he makes a decision on what he's going to do. But I think both tours certainly should want him, right? He's one of the only needle movers to me in golf who are kind of like appointment television and make people want to tune in. So I think both of these tours have to want him. It's just a matter of who, you know, how much Liv would want to pay him. And then, like, does the tour figure out a way? Obviously, they figured out a way to get him back, but can they figure out a way to do that and be on Bryson's terms as well?
Now, Bob, let's go back to the PNC Championship late last year, when you and I both had a chance to talk to Trevor Immelman, the chairman of the official World Golf Ranking Board. He talked about the work that he's doing with Scott O'Neill, the CEO of LIV Golf, about trying to resolve the issue of LIV Golf not getting world ranking points. You had a chance to talk with Scott about this last week, and he seemed optimistic in my mind that this could get resolved before they start their season just next month in Saudi Arabia. How does that happen, and what are some of the changes that they're considering to make this maybe a little bit more attractive to the world golf ranking?
Yeah, look, I think Trevor has been, you know, sort of trying to be a unifying figure in all of this. Instead of the division and the, you know, sort of the angst that we've seen and the charges that OWGR doesn't want them to be part of this, he's reached out. I mean, he has been in constant contact with Scott O'Neill. I don't know to what level. I mean, are they guiding them? Are they trying to steer them in the direction that would help them be compliant? You know, look, they increased the number of spots to the tour from their promotions event from 1 to 3. They went from 1 to 2 from the international series. So they created 5 spots onto the tour. The lack of relegation and promotion was a big issue with OWGR. So to me was the lack of field variance, which they've not addressed, but maybe that isn't a big deal anymore to OWGR. LIV has suggested that they are going to expand this year their number of players that are relegated. It was 6 after 2025. There's some rumblings that it might be up to 10 or 12. I mean, I think those are all steps to help with OWGR. So is going to 72 holes, even though I don't really think that was a deal breaker. But all these things are in line with what OWGR would like to see. Does it get done in time for their first event next month? I'm not sure. You know, O'Neill's hopeful of that. You know, I don't know why it couldn't happen. If it doesn't happen for the first event, why couldn't it happen for the 3rd or the 5th or the 6th? And also what we don't know is, are they telling OWGR, here's some other changes that we're going to do that we haven't announced? The typical roadblocks for OWGR are things like, can you pay a purse? Can you run your tour effectively? These are the reasons why they don't, accredit right away. Well, obviously we know they can do those things. They need to be satisfied that these pathways are being met.
Let's return to the roundtable with Bob Herrig and Josh Carpenter. And Josh, I'll start with you on this one. Brooks Koepka returning to PGA Tour competition next week at the Farmers Insurance Open, the first time he's played in the PGA Tour since 2022. What do you think will be the trickle-down effect as it relates to Brooks and his peers on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, in terms of potential peers, I mean, like we mentioned earlier, I don't know that we'll necessarily see Bryson or Cam Smith or John Rahm come back to the PGA Tour this year. But to me, what this move by Brian Rolapp does, again, it just creates this talking point that everyone is going to be asked about the entire year. Like, Bryson's going to be asked about this basically at every tournament he shows up. Like, where are you at in your contract negotiations? How are you feeling? What have you seen the tour doing that would make you want to go back there? So I think it'll be brought up throughout the year amongst those kind of other three players, maybe lesser so to an extent to like Cam Smith and John Rahm. But I think what it shows also is like the tour's willingness to go away from these rules that they had created when LIV was launched about players not coming back. Like, Brian Rolapp's come in and just said, look, I'm the new sheriff in town. Like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Like, it wouldn't shock me if there was some other type of exemption for other players, maybe not included in these first four, but like, there are a lot of good players on LIV Golf. And so it wouldn't shock me if there was some other exemption that was catered more toward maybe a few of these young up-and-coming players, your Tom McKibbins of the world, your Joaquin Niemans of the world, your Caleb Surratts of the world. You know, the tour would love to have guys like that. And so what would keep the tour from creating another type of program that would allow some of those types of guys to come back. I don't know that they'll create a program that'll cater toward any of the players who were part of that lawsuit against the tour a few years ago, but it certainly wouldn't shock me to see another one coming down later on that caters to some of these younger guys.
Josh, I'm going to stick with you because I don't think anybody covers the business of golf better than you do. And we're having this long conversation about Tiger Woods mentioned at the Hero World Classic that they'd like to get the new schedule done, whatever that's going to look like, by 2027. We just had a conversation about the Hawaii swing. The Century contract right now is through 2035. It's pretty much another decade. How realistic is it that the tour can get to something closer to whatever scarcity means to Brian Rolapp and Tiger Woods by 2027?
Yeah, I think we're likely to see it by 2027. I was talking with an executive at Zurich Insurance last week about some of their new golf ambassadors, and he told me that basically he had the feeling that everyone's going to get some direction, maybe not a full 2027 schedule, but I think we can expect to see some kind of direction around 2027, maybe around the Players' Championship, kind of that time frame. So I know there are a lot of moving parts, but if you look at some of Bob and the rest of you guys, like some of the expiring sponsor deals, we talked about Sony being up. There are a number of others throughout the season that are up after 2026 that have not been renewed at this point. Typically, you would see those renewals coming in. We saw a lot of renewals last year. Your Wyndham Championships of the World just up the road for me. Charles Schwab Challenge is up in 2026. And there are a handful of others throughout the season where it could potentially make sense for the PGA Tour to cut back, or maybe they move to a new type of tournament or sponsorship around some of these that have expiring deals, and maybe we see that in the future. It'll be really interesting to see what it looks like in 2027. But I do think 2027, something is going to happen, next year.
Bob, I'm sure you're going to be out at Torrey Pines next week for Brooks's return. We heard what Wyndham Clark had to say last week on SiriusXM, saying he was a little bit torn over the decision, almost sounded a little bit bitter or resentful that Brooks was able to get his cake and also eat it too. What are you anticipating the player reaction to be next week and over the next couple of months? Do you think that people are going to be welcoming back with open arms, or do you think that players are going to be a little bit hostile towards Brooks that he was able to sort of play both sides of the fence here?
Yeah, I think it's going to be mixed, but I think it's more going to be in his favor. You know, the majority of the players probably were not even approached by Liv. They certainly weren't offered the kind of money that that Brooks got, and that kind of money isn't there now. And they have been rewarded, or most of them, with the opportunity at least to pursue these equity grants. That was what they were given in return for staying. They've seen purses go up exponentially. There might not be signature events if the whole Live Golf thing had not occurred, which is obviously enriching most of these guys. So, you know, I think if they take a broader view of it, they recognize that this has probably been good for them. It might not have been good for the game. The division has not been good. The fighting, the infighting. We still have, we still have these two separate entities that are competing for a niche viewership. You know, a niche audience. Golf is a niche sport. And, you know, Liv is trying to compete in a world where it's hard to get eyeballs when, you know, and you guys were mentioning it just over this past weekend, you know, competing against the NFL, competing against all the other sports entities out there. And, oh, by the way, they have to compete against the PGA Tour in a lot of the same time slots when they are in North America. So, you know, I think the majority of the PGA Tour players probably recognize that they've come out okay in this. And oh, by the way, it's created more opportunities for them because there's less players vying for those spots. There's probably 20 or 30 players over there who would still be on the PGA Tour if there had been no Live. And now with the condensed tour, less jobs. So, you know, I think eventually they're going to come around, but I understand why there might be some guys with that feeling like Clark had, because he might have been one of those who turned down some big money.
Now, Bob, Rory spoke with the Telegraph last week from the Middle East, and he brought up the point that Liv Golf really hasn't signed any quote-unquote needle movers the last few years, and he doesn't think they will going forward. Now, Rory is not one to shy away from controversial comments, but is this him reading the tea leaves, reading the room correctly, or is it wishful thinking?
No, I think there's probably something to that. I mean, really, since John Rahm signed two-plus years ago, they have not gotten a player of that caliber to come over to Liv. And there's nothing, this is not to disparage any of the guys that they've signed here recently. I mean, obviously Thomas Dietrich is a good player. He won in Phoenix last year. You know, they've got several good young players they've brought on board. But look, we can make the argument even Rahm didn't move the needle much. You know, did he really? I mean, I get that we're talking about it and there's been coverage of it, but their TV ratings in the U.S., which are the barometer for sports media rights deals around the world, have been poor. There's no other way around it. They have just not been very good. Even Bryson. I mean, as popular as Bryson is and as popular as Bryson's U.S. Open win was at Pinehurst, and with all the attention he gets on YouTube, it doesn't really translate to Liv very much. I mean, I know they have a lot of fans and they have a lot of people interested, and there are golf fans who like both. But when Bryson played the following week, I believe it was in Nashville after Pinehurst, while there was a good local turnout and a lot of people showed up, I don't think there was a huge spike in TV ratings that wanted to tune in and watch him. That's a problem. You know, the money is going to come from media rights. There's no sports organization in the world that functions, profitably without big TV media rights deals. And until they're able to secure that somehow, it's going to be hard for them.
All right, Bob, I'm going to let you get out of here on this. And I need you to speak directly to my delusional friend here, because he did the whole last show wearing a University of Georgia shirt. He clearly doesn't understand how the college football playoffs work. I see you're sporting the Indiana logo. You're an Evan scholar. You have 10 seconds to convince my friend why you're doing it the right way.
Hey, listen, this might be our only chance, Ryan. Come on. You know, you guys got a long history of success. We're gonna ride this while we can.
Got an older roster than the Packers, the Green Bay Packers. My God, an NFL team. What are we doing here?
Thanks for your time, boys.
And folks, let's take a quick look back at some of the recent winners of the American Express, including John Rahm, who in 2023 fired a final round 68 to win his second PGA Tour event in as many starts. And a year later, who can remember this one? Nick Dunlap, taking the title, became the first amateur to win on the PGA Tour since Phil Mickelson in 1991. Dunlap tied the scoring record by an amateur with a third round 60 and holed a testy par putt on the 72nd hole to make history. Now last year, it was Sepp Straka who shot a final round 70 to beat Justin Thomas by two strokes. The win was his third on the PGA Tour. Straka played the stadium course in 10 under par for the week, including a second round 64 on his way to victory. This week, the PGA Tour returns to the California desert for the 2026 American Express. You can catch live first round coverage this Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. We'd like to welcome in the executive director of the American Express, Pat McKay. Pat, thank you so much for waking up early and taking the time. I've read a couple of reports now, and it's very impressive. This looks like the strongest field in I don't know how long that you've had for that tournament. What's been the excitement level around your office the last few weeks?
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's been tremendous. You nailed it. We have 27 of the top 50 in the world teeing it up this week at the American Express, five of the top 10, and number one in the world, Scottie Scheffler, is joining us once again to kick off his season. So we are extremely excited. The golf fans here in the Coachella Valley are extremely excited. So should be a phenomenal week.
Pat, how do you explain it? How do you explain that the field rating is stronger than any signature event over the past 2 years? Obviously, Kapalua and the Century got canceled. PGA Tour season started last week at the Sony Open. But why do you think your field has received such a big bump?
I think there's a number of reasons. I think early in the season, for sure, these players love getting a guaranteed three competitive rounds, right? We are 156 pros. We are 156 amateurs. So we're the largest field on the PGA Tour, which we're proud of. And we don't make the cut until Saturday. So a guaranteed three rounds, typically out here in the Coachella Valley in La Quinta, the weather is perfect. We call it dome golf out here, where it's low 70s, very little wind, and to get that start. And also the collaboration amongst our title sponsor, American Express, of course, our host organization, Impact Through Golf, and all of the great sponsors and business executives that are here during the week, it makes it just the perfect recipe for what's going to be a great week.
Now, I want to drill down a little bit into this field. Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, showed up this year. How does that impact just not the excitement on the property, but in the community?
Yeah, big time for sure. Anytime the world number one is in your field, it brings a new buzz and excitement for sure. I know he was unfortunately missed last year due to his injury, but he's excited to come back. Got a chance to spend a few minutes with him this morning, and he's in great form and excited to get going. And like I said, to have 5 of the top 10 in the world and 27 of 50, and also players who have not played this tournament before, guys like Adam Scott, or maybe some players who have not played this event for a few years, guys like Max Homa. The field from 1 to 156 is as deep and as strong as it's ever been.
Pat, you mentioned this is the biggest field on the PGA Tour, and yet all we hear now is scarcity and contraction and trying to shrink the PGA Tour product. When you look at the future of this tournament and how it fits in the PGA Tour landscape, what's your best pitch to CEO Brian Rolapp and company?
Well, I know I'm going to put all my focus and energy on this week for sure. We have a recipe for success. Like I mentioned, a title sponsor, American Express, in their 7th year as our title sponsor, our host organization, the Impact Through Golf Foundation, and the collection of businessmen and women who are here, and the relationships that they're able to forge with these professional athletes is phenomenal. We have one of the best fan experiences on the PGA Tour, where we treat all of our fans like VIPs. And we also have some pretty good concerts on Friday and Saturday night with Old Dominion and One Republic. So the recipe is strong, almost $70 million for charity throughout this tournament's history. And we're very proud of what we've been able to accomplish.
Now, along those lines, American Express stepped in as the title sponsor in 2020. I've seen it covering that event over the last few years, but I'd like to get your take on how has them stepping in as title sponsor changed the energy, the dynamic on property?
Oh, in a big way, right? They're all about premium experiences for their card members. And so when you look around the grounds here at PGA West and La Quinta Country Club, the amenities that are offered for fans, the card member discount that they are providing for their ticket holders, and also in the merchandise shop, and the local shop small mentality that they take is tremendous. We've got a number of local restaurants here on site. And the economic impact, $30 million on an annual basis. What they've done since 2020 alongside our host organization has been tremendous.
Pat, there's been a big push on the PGA Tour to get into big cities and to big markets. Rex and I have both been to Palm Springs. We've been to La Quinta. Why do those types of markets on the PGA Tour, why does it still matter to the overall product?
For sure. You know, this is the 67th year of this event, and it is iconic. You have three great golf courses, the Pete Dye Stadium course, the Nicklaus Tournament course, which are in tremendous condition. La Quinta Country Club has been our host partner for 52 years. The longevity of this event is truly tremendous. And it is such a golf-rich community for you all who have been out here. You see the golf carts riding around, the members of the club, and there is so many golf courses that are here in the Valley. And of course, PGA West, which has 9 golf courses, but the top quality that's around, and I think that's another piece of why players love coming here, the amenities that are offered outside the ropes, the host families that they're staying with at different properties. And so all of the golf courses here, it's a golf-rich community, it's an event community, and the buzz for next week is really, really high.
You called it golf-rich. I would take it a step further, and I mean this as a compliment, and say golf-nerdy community. You mentioned it. They drive to the golf course in golf carts. It's really cool to see how savvy of fans you get at that event. But I would be curious, watching the concerts the last few years, have you balanced what happens inside the ropes with this great field you have with what happens outside the ropes with the concerts and everything else?
Yeah, you heard me talk about the fans. That's a huge part of this. And we are in a music community as well as a golf community. Just right down the road, Stagecoach and Coachella take place on an annual basis in April. And so this year we have Old Dominion and One Republic playing shows. And the fans, the golf fans and the non-golf fans, are just as excited about those top-notch talent acts as they are the golfers playing in the event. So they should put on tremendous shows both nights. We've had bands like Journey and Little Big Town, Keith Urban, Luke Bryan. So top-level talent. And I expect about 20,000 people on the driving range on Friday, Saturday night to take in the show.
That was my favorite part of the week. I believe a few years ago it was a Maroon 5 concert. It was awesome. Pat, thank you so much for your time and good luck this week.
All right, I appreciate it, and thanks for the time.
I have covered that event a few times. You have as well. When we talk about the bigger picture, and you did a good job of asking questions in a very delicate way, because this is not a big market. The Coachella Valley is not what Brian Rolapp would say, yes, that's where the PGA Tour has to be. But to your point, the Sony Open, we just opened the show with the idea that, are you not entertained by these events?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at tradition, we're looking at history, we're looking at heritage, we're looking at nostalgia. These are all really important elements to the overall PGA Tour product. And yes, I think the private equity clan probably doesn't like to hear those types of descriptors. They like to look at inefficiencies. They like to look at what could be economically feasible. But I do think when you're looking at the grand picture of the PGA Tour, something would be lost. You're talking about a tournament that's been around for 60 or 70 years. The list of winners that they have on a great golf course, and clearly, as this field shows, the top players want to play it. They want to start their season in the PGA Tour in the Coachella Valley.
As you're quick to remind me on a regular basis, I'm a man of a certain age, so I'm always going to refer to it as the Bob Hope, because that's what it was growing up. And it was such one of those iconic stops. You would put it right alongside Pebble Beach. As you saw the celebrities play, they were playing in the desert. It was in the middle of the winter. It was a reason to tune in and enjoy this product. I understand that the PGA Tour is heading in a different direction, and I've spoken with enough officials at the Tour who've pointed out the Tour's not in enough of the major markets. The Coachella Valley is not one of those major markets, but it would definitely be a blow to the PGA Tour, certainly to that community, if that wasn't part of the schedule going forward.
Look, it's evolved. It's not as celebrity-centric anymore. You just heard Pat McCabe talk about it. There's the festival-type atmosphere that they have on Fridays and Saturdays. All of these PGA Tour events seem to be evolving that fan-friendly model.
Back on Golf Today, a reminder that the LPGA Tour gets underway January 29th with the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions in Orlando. You can catch live coverage right here on Golf Channel. Let's take a look at the LPGA Tour season for 2026. That's 31 official events. That's 5 majors. The tour will travel to 13 countries and 13 states. And the Solheim Cup will be held September 11th through 13th in the Netherlands. And that is a perfect segue to welcome in Angela Stanford.
But first, Rex, I know you're excited to get to our guest, but first, let's flash back to the 2018 Evian Championship when Angela Stanford secured her first major title in her 76th career major championship appearance. It was a one-shot victory for her first win in 6 years. Here's the bio blast on one Angela Stanford, those 7 LPGA victories. And how about this, 100 career top 10 finishes, and she, in 2026, will lead the U.S. Solheim Cup team. And what a pleasure it is to be joined by this year's Solheim Cup captain, Angela Stanford. Angela, I'm always very curious how this works. You retired as a full-time player in 2024. A, what did you do last year? B, what did you miss? And C, what did you not?
Well, it was still really busy. And first off, thank you so much for having me this morning. Always a pleasure to talk to you guys. You know, I stayed really busy. Lots of Solheim Cup stuff and played some Legends events. I will say every Thursday morning, I missed having my name called on the first tee and teeing it up on the LPGA Tour. But I've been really busy, though.
You were sporting the sweater. I just mentioned Solheim Cup captain this year for the U.S. team. That is 9 months away. What are the next 9 months going to be like for you?
Well, again, going to be really busy. And this is, you know, now we're into year of, so really kind of focusing on the players now. We still have some planning to do. We're working out our clothing right now and getting all the final touches done there. But this is my favorite part. We're going to start focusing on the players, get to watch them week in and week out a little bit closer. And I love Solheim Cup years.
Angela, this is the exact opposite of what Keegan Bradley had last year for the U.S. Ryder Cup team, where he was trying to balance his playing responsibilities while also trying to be a captain. Do you actually think it's beneficial for you to have stepped away from the full-time role so you can really devote all of yourself to keeping tabs on the potential players and making sure this goes exactly right for the Americans?
I think it has its positives and its negatives. I think, yes, on one hand, I get to just put my full focus in watching them, but you know, Keegan had something special, just like Stacy did when she was a captain in 23 and 24. She got to play week in and week out with them, you know, got to walk the fairways with them. I probably won't be at as many events as I want to be, but getting to kind of watch behind the scenes, watch their numbers. So there's good and bad to both of them, I think.
We were just talking in the break. You were at the U.S. Ryder Cup in last year at Bethpage. What did you take away from that experience? Is there anything that you learned being on property that might help you this year?
I learned quite a bit. And some of that I can't really share with you because I don't want to give away our secrets.
It's but safe. What here. If it's just it's, between it's us? It's safe. Yeah, we're not going to tell anybody.
I'm not going to fall for that one in January. You know, I think just the demeanor of the captains, you know, I think I was watching them closely. And I think just, you know, I watch Keegan and then I would watch Luke and, you know, just how they interacted with their players, how they interacted with the fans. And, you know, I guess being a player and being an assistant captain, I've never really thought about just looking at the captain ever, you know. So I don't know, just watching their demeanor and then a bunch of other stuff that, again, we learned. And so grateful that PGA of America invited our LPGA contingency to just come and have a behind-the-scenes look. And, you know, we got to see the U.S. team room, got to see some of the hospitality suites and things like that. So I think I just really appreciate that they allowed us to come out. And we're trying to make our event the best it can be.
Angela, what's going to be your process for keeping tabs on the potential players on this U.S. Solheim Cup team? Is it going to be calls and texts after victories? Are there going to be some sort of team building exercises throughout the year? What do the next couple months, you know, in particular look like for you in terms of building out your roster?
Well, I feel like I have a pretty good relationship with most of the women on the team. I've been following them since, you know, 2020. You know, being an assistant since 21, I feel like I know a lot of them pretty well. So kind of continue that. Don't change just because I'm the captain. Talk to the caddies quite a bit. And we do have a team event that we're doing March 14th and 15th in Northern California right before the Fortinet Championship. So that'll be a lot of fun just to kind of get people together. Let's get on the same page. Let's communicate as captains and assistant captains what we're expecting and what we're going to be watching for and just kind of lay it out and get them ready for this year.
You mentioned at the Ryder Cup watching Luke interact with his team, watching Keegan interact with his team and what you learned from them. I went back to an interview that you did recently with Amy Rogers where you talked about Stacey Lewis and you have very similar captain styles. What did you maybe learn from Stacey's captaincy that you can apply this year?
Well, Stacey told me to, I needed to work on the way I just kind of stood there. Stacey told me that I need to look a little more relaxed, basically. And I wanted to say, well, Stacey, you don't ever look that relaxed. So I think she's really been extremely helpful. You know, Stacey just wants the best for our team and, you know, for the LPGA in general. So she's been very helpful and just, you know, when you need to speak up and when, you know, which battles you need to really fight. And so, you know, to get to watch her for two Solheims, basically 23 in Spain and 24 in Virginia, that really helped me. And again, she's been great. And I've already called her a few times to ask her a few things. So Stacey's been great.
And Angela, just switching gears real quick, it's a new era on the LPGA with Craig Kesler at the helm. What gives you the greatest sense of optimism as it relates to this new tenure in the LPGA's history?
Well, I think he's extremely genuine and he's very energetic. He has a lot of energy. He's bringing that energy to our tour. But the thing that I've enjoyed the most about Craig is he's been very genuine, very authentic. I believe his heart's in the right place. I think he wants to grow the game. He wants to grow our tour. And I mean, we've already seen it. He's already brought in sponsors, just spent time with them at Pebble Beach for the 75th foundation event. So I think the part that makes me really excited is that I know his heart's in the right place. He really wants to grow our tour for all the right reasons. So I'm excited to see everything that he has in store and he's off to a great start.
Well, Angela, thank you so much for your time, and I hope you really enjoy the next 9 months. I know it's going to be an exciting time.
I will. Thank you all.
All right. Some exciting news today is the first wave of women's participants in the TGL League was announced. It includes Brooke Henderson, Charlie Hull, Lydia Ko, and Lexi Thompson, all playing in the Women's TGL League. We'll look forward to that.